Hola, hola, my name is Ricardo. I am the host of the Lucha Jobbers podcast here in the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. We are a Spanish-speaking show dedicated to discussing and analyzing pro wrestling from all across the world. From AEW to CMLL, we talk about American wrestling, Japanese wrestling, and of course, Lucha Libre. If something big happened in the pro wrestling world, we will talk about it. So if you know Spanish or have a friend that knows Spanish or want to practice your Lucha Libre pronunciations, go listen to the Lucha Jobbers podcast right here in the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. Nos vemos por ahí.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast. I am your host, as always, Jesse Collings. And returning to the show, he's another fellow New Englander, as one of the main qualifications of appearing on this podcast. He is the host of Josh Nason's Punch Out on the F4WON online podcasting network. Do you guys have an official name for that podcasting network?
I think you pretty much named it right there.
Yeah.
unofficial. Yeah, we don't really have an official name, no.
Right. And he's also the contributing editor for the site. It's Josh Nason. Josh, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is a big week coming up, of course. You know, as you mentioned, fellow New Englander, and I am awaiting. This is Tuesday, April 2nd, not to break kayfabe as we're recording this. And I'm looking outside, you know, nice weather out, but in like 48 hours or less, we're going to have snow again. And this is ridiculous. It's April 2nd, and we're already planning for snow.
Well, there hasn't been a lot of snow this year, if I'm being honest.
No.
I think I only had a shovelable amount of snow like once all year after not getting a lot of snow last year. You're a little bit more north of me.
We've had a few. Yeah, I'm in New Hampshire. We've had a few more, southern New Hampshire. So we've had a few more cases of that. But right, you know, the Red Sox are playing, and just ready to be done with all this stuff. Next week's supposed to be in the 60s. I know people love weather talk, so I'm glad we're kicking off with this. But yeah, it's a connection point.
It sure is. Yeah, we're gonna get like an inch of snow, I think, on Thursday, if that. I'm not really expecting anything. As long as it doesn't snow during the eclipse, which we talked about briefly on air, is that I'm going to Canada for the eclipse. So I'll be very disappointed if I spend all that time and energy to get there only for it to be very cloudy at roughly 3:30 Eastern time in the afternoon when the eclipse is supposed to happen.
Yeah.
But anyway, Josh is really here to talk about WrestleMania and specifically the main events of WrestleMania, you know, night one and night two. The entire kind of build and angle between Cody Rhodes and The Rock and Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins. And I'll have an open-ended question for you, Josh, that I think is a good place for us to get started. But we'll talk about the night two main event in a bit, but this night one main event, this tag match between Roman tagging with The Rock versus Seth and Cody. Here's the open-ended question. This is the biggest WrestleMania main event since blank.
The Roman Cody match is the biggest WrestleMania since blank.
Not the Roman Cody match.
Oh, sorry, the tag team match.
The tag team match, bigger than night two, but we'll get into that later. But just how hot this angle seems to be, how big business seems to be related to it. When was the last time it felt like WrestleMania had a main event that felt this big and as important?
I kind of liked last year's, you know, with just the...
So the Roman and Cody.
Yeah, I got sucked into the story of it. And it's really, really hard to not like Cody Rhodes in this iteration, what he's done. And especially, you know, following his travails through the years and from AEW, that run... Or what I don't know how Roman Reigns described the other place, or he was gone somewhere or something, doing something not important. However, he didn't chose to not acknowledge AEW, but yeah, I was really into last year's because I am going to stick with last year's because I remember having a emotional reaction after it, not, you know, tears or rage or anything like that, but I gave a shit, you know, I cared about it, I cared about what happened, and I was shocked when Cody didn't win. And I just had it made me feel something. Your other main events that they've had through the years have been like, okay, you know, like, you know, The Rock and Cena, and, you know, those kind of fun spectacles. But after, it wasn't, you weren't thinking, you didn't really have, like, at least I didn't have that connection point. And I think that's kind of part of it. It's supposed to make you feel something. I know many people are into ratings and how those make them feel, but you're supposed to care about what makes you feel what we're watching. And last year made me feel something afterwards. I'm like, I just can't believe that Cody Rhodes didn't win. I just don't. So I would say last year.
So you're telling me that you don't have a feeling, and then the 18 to 49 demographic information comes out at 4 o'clock next afternoon, and that changes your feeling?
Right. I have a much different feeling. Why do people just stake their entire, like, I don't know, online existence to this? And we've talked about how Twitter/X is just, it's just awful anyway. And just the amount of people that are rooting for numbers versus caring about what they're watching is if, you know, Triple H or someone is going to come bless them and make them part of the official part of the W Universe family or something like that. It's just, I don't know, they're numbers. And so many people get so tied down the minutiae of the week to week stuff and don't kind of look at, like, you know, bigger picture with, you know, trends and things like that. And there's, you know, other competition on TV and, you know, just, but so many people just, they see that as a win and they're cheering, you know, they're cheering for laundry, to steal a term from pro sports.
You're cheering for a WrestleNomics graph.
Right. Yeah. And then just, you know, taking out the people who are just trying to report. Someone puts out a number. They're like, oh, you're, you know, we'll show this bias towards this. And I don't know. And then you bring this up to them, the people that do, and then, you know, they find some other way to put down Dave Meltzer or somebody. It's just a whole scene. But yeah.
Well, to talk about numbers for a second, and one other, I feel like this is the biggest angle cumulatively they've had since at least the first Rock versus Cena match, and even before that, because I don't really remember, just from a business perspective, like, Cody versus Roman was definitely hot last year. That was, and I had the same kind of segment with Adam Berger last year when I had him on this show doing kind of a WrestleMania preview. And I said, this, you know, the Cody versus Roman match is definitely the biggest WrestleMania main event in quite a while. But I feel like this has surpassed that, just in terms of, I think the build, like, week to week interest in the build and what's going to happen in these segments that are on Raw and SmackDown. Interest has been super high in those. They've had this TV show sellout streak where they, you know, have really upgraded the amount of, you know, the number of sellouts that they have, and packing in 14,000-15,000 people into these TV tapings for both Raw and SmackDown. I just think that this is really, like, the biggest angle and match that I can think that they have done that's been carried out over several months, in a very, very long time. It really does, to me, you know, with the exception of last year's show, kind of put into perspective that WrestleMania had maybe lost a little bit of its luster over the last 10 years or so. Because think back to, not my youth, Josh, but your youth. Mm-hmm. And you think about the WrestleMania main event, right? Let's go back to WrestleMania 3, Hogan versus Andre, right? This giant match. WrestleMania 4, we'll kind of skip. WrestleMania 5, you know, the mega powers explode. Like, that was just such a gigantic match. To this day, it feels like this huge match of incredible consequence and importance with this gigantically long buildup. Ultimate Warrior versus Hulk Hogan the following year. It felt like that, you know, that is WrestleMania. That is at the core of what WrestleMania is. It's supposed to be this gigantic show with this match that is by far the most highly anticipated match of the year, and nothing else is even close. And you look back at the last 10 years of WrestleMania, and it's like, oh yeah, there were, you know, a lot of WrestleMania main events, but gosh, there weren't a lot of really, like, emotional investments that people had in matches. And a lot of it was part-time stars and things like that. But this, it definitely feels like a proper WrestleMania. Like, It's hard to believe there'll be. I think I can only think of one specific match that is going to be bigger, that I can envision that will be bigger than this tag team match, and subsequently the main event of night two, that could be later this year, and that's if like a Cody versus Rock match happens at some point this year. But it does feel like this is just a gigantic matches because there's two nights of WrestleMania, in a way that we really haven't had in quite a long period of time, and it kind of reminds people of like what WrestleMania is supposed to be.
Right. And, to you were talking earlier about some of those, mid-80s, late-80s, rather, WrestleManias. One of the big differences then was there wasn't nearly, like, not even as much close to as much TV as there is now. It was much, much harder to find stuff. We were relegated to find, watching, getting Coliseum videotapes at our local video store and hoping maybe, depending if you had cable or not, you were able to get, NWA or WCW rather, and you're able to get other stuff, but it was much, much, much harder. And obviously the internet was not the beast and didn't exist the way it is now in terms of getting information. You had to rely on newsletters and Pro Wrestling Illustrated and whatever magazines you'd get at the store. But yeah, from an emotion standpoint, of course, and looking over some of these previous main events, I mean, you look at things even like Mania 38, which was Lesnar versus Reigns in a winner take all match for there's a unification of titles, and you would think, generally title unification bouts are treated as such big things, but due to the previous years of, oh, they're just going to reverse this at some point. This isn't going to be the way it's going to be forever. It takes some of the oomph out of it. And again, Lesnar, I've always been a big Lesnar fan, but his, towards this last few end of the years, last few years rather, it just, that interest level has completely gone away. And that spectacle and seeing him just isn't, to me, isn't the same.
And they had done Roman versus Brock so many times by the
Oh,
time they got to that match,
yeah.
like
Yep.
it didn't feel, this match, this, Rock and Roman tag team match against Cody and Seth, like this is a match we have never seen before.
Right. And, going back to kind of the build for this, it's reminiscent of, what we're not used to seeing in WWE, which is long-term booking. And there's
Well,
years, well, like the years of, I'm talking like, so long-term in that, so, you go to WrestleMania 4 and 5, it was the Hogan Savage thing built over a year. Cena and Rock, they did that back-to-back. And, they definitely, a long-term booking, and again, it's tough because you're never really going to get the honest truth as far as when things came up, when the plan was for this, and so on and so forth. But, as far as, 39, the Usos, the Owens and Zayn beat the Usos. I was like one chip away from the whole bloodline thing. Reigns obviously wins the next night. And then you're kind of figuring, okay, how kind of there was a big question of what's going to happen. And, Triple H acknowledged as much, saying, what the exact phrase, but some derivation of a driving of, the story's not over yet, or
I
keep,
believe he said the story never ends. There's
the
always
story
the next
never,
show. There's always,
right?
after WrestleMania, there'll be an episode of Raw, and there'll be a pay-per-view after that, and a pay-per-view after that, and a WrestleMania after that. The story
Yeah,
never ends.
and how he, it was basically this thing of, don't, almost like don't lose faith. Like it's this basically, like, we hear you, like it's a. It was kind of weird because you don't ever, well, I guess you hear show creators after shows are done or storylines are done and what have you, kind of, talk about some of those aspects. But there was a lot of people that were upset by that, by him losing. And it's amazing that they had to acknowledge as much and in their own way, in his own way. And again, someday maybe we'll get the truth. I don't know as far as when kind of this plan was hatched and how we got here. But however he did, if it was a happy accident or more planned than we thought, or some elements were, but there were some serendipitous things that happened along the way, we got to two nights where there's no question these are the two biggest matches that they can do on both nights. And there's and it's good to have that. It's clear to have that. One leads into another. And how they've woven this in over the past few months has been riveting. riveting is not even a strong enough word, but we go back for, far back as when Cody was going to challenge Roman, and then The Rock came out and said something to him. He walked away. From that moment, to where we are going to get to has been a really fun and interesting ride. And we haven't been able to say that about WWE in a long time in terms of this level of just of curiosity and interest and different people involved and Splinter's kind of off the storyline. It's really fascinating to see, and it's fun to see, and it's good. And it's not even a, and this is the thing, kind of the flip side of the whole, the WWE versus AEW, stupid debates in terms of you can only like one or the other. Fans, as much as the WWE, AEW haters are missing a lot of good stuff in AEW, I'm sure there's plenty of AEW fans who are like, I'm tired of WWE, I don't want to watch this. They're missing this really good story. And, you know, it's a shame that way. But, you know, those of us that are able to flip back and forth and go on both sides of the wall, this is going to be, I think, a pretty fun weekend coming up.
I definitely think, like, last year, I was very suspect of the decision to beat Cody at WrestleMania. I thought it was a huge risk to take of Cody being hot at that moment and not capitalizing on that. And I thought that the finish to the match of just Solo Sikoa, you know, giving him the Samoan spike and costing him the match was very uncreative. But a year removed from that decision, I can't say that it was a disastrous decision to make. It obviously, Cody still feels like he's just as hot, if not hotter, than he was at the same time last year. He was able to get a year's worth of kind of storylines done without being the champion or challenging Roman again. So obviously that has worked out in their favor. This build, which really starts, you know, Cody wins the Royal Rumble. And by the close of the Royal Rumble, it was kind of really obvious he was going to challenge Roman. It's kind of been this storyline dating back to last year's WrestleMania, as you said, where Cody said he basically had no interest in Seth's world title and that he was only interested in getting revenge on Roman for costing him the match at WrestleMania. And so Cody wins the Royal Rumble again, and the obvious storyline is Cody now can finally get his revenge against Roman Reigns because he's won the Royal Rumble and now he can challenge Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. The following Monday on Raw, they do a segment where Seth like casts some doubt into, oh, don't you really want this title, the workers' title, and not like the other title that Roman has that you've been chasing for a year? And then they do the SmackDown segment, like you said. And then there's that backlash of Rock coming out, like Cody being like, all right, I'm not going to challenge you, Roman, because this guy is, and it's The Rock. And The Rock comes out, and it's supposed to be this big surprise. And the fan base, at least online, which is not everyone, of course, you know, totally rejects that, right? There was that period of about, I don't know, 48 hours or longer, where people were more upset about, you know, The Rock getting that WrestleMania match than anything they've been upset about in WWE for quite a long period of time. And then they have this, one of the most bizarre things in the history of WWE in hindsight, this weird pseudo events in Las Vegas, the weekend of the Super Bowl, in just 6 days after the SmackDown episode, where they essentially erase the SmackDown episode from canon, where the idea that like Cody gave Roman this gave Rock his the you know let Rock challenge Roman and Cody wasn't going to use his title shot, Rock turns heel despite being a babyface on Friday, and they basically retcon the entire angle that they shot on that Friday SmackDown, which was supposed to be like the biggest angle they've shot in years, right? That Rock is returning and he's going to fight Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. Holy shit. And they just kind of like erase that from history, and they pivot towards this tag team match. And that's obviously been hugely successful. To me, it was alarming that they could get away with kind of erasing something that they had just filmed on television a few days before. But at the end of the day, the personalities are big enough, the stars feel important enough and the vibes are all there with the promotion that fans are willing to easily overlook that, logic gap and that erasure, to get where we are today, which is feeling, The Rock has been very wise pivoting heel, and he's been great as a heel from a performance perspective. The fans like Cody. It was the right move to get to this type of match. I just don't. I really was surprised that's how they went about doing it, by essentially like erasing that episode of SmackDown.
Well, it's a benefit of being hot, right? You can, if you're hot, then people will forgive a lot. And
Yeah, and
there's
it captures what people want out of WrestleMania, which is big stars, catchphrases, guys insulting each other, big match. And it's okay if it doesn't make perfect logic or really not that much logical sense at all.
So I'm curious when the actual, if there was an actual pivot made, or how, because they had to know there was going to be some sort of blowback to completely replacing the Rhodes made it with the Rock. I mean, unless they're completely oblivious and like, or just saying it doesn't matter, do a steel phrase on the Rock. Like, it doesn't matter what people think. We're going to go with the biggest names in this thing, and we'll fix the Cody thing later. Like, there was that article. I still haven't read the full thing in ESPN the other day about basically they kind of this the story about how they pivoted or why they pivoted
That is
and all
that
this.
was not a real article by Mark Criamondi.
Mark and Mike Coppinger, the same
Yeah,
guy
so
who ripped on
that's just a
AEW.
Fed article to talk about how great Paul Levesque is, but
Well, the one line I saw early on when I was kind of like, huh, it was like the fifth paragraph. Like, they're talking about, Rhodes being doing a cover shoot for WWE 2K and or 2K24. And they said he was asked at the time about The Rock. He said, and like, why would they buy in November? Why would they ask about this? This was when this happened. And, I don't consider him in my way. Maybe he is a main guy I need. Maybe he wants to get in. I don't know. Like, there'd be no way that they would bring that up to him in November. Like, it just didn't make, that was
well,
kind of
people have been
crazy.
talking about The Rock, wrestling Roman Reigns at WrestleMania for years,
Forever.
literally. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So, yeah. So I'm, they were able to kind of to retcon is probably the best word in terms of they just kind of moved on from it and never really explained it. And they just leaned so heavily into the, a true, for the most part, babyface heel dynamic, even though The Rock is as much as you want to say he's this great heel, he's a cool heel and
Well,
people
he's the
still love him.
Rock. He's the most
Yeah,
charismatic
it's
person.
impossible. Yeah. It's funny when he said being the the best heel since the 80s. I mean, he was a heel when he was in WWE multiple times. Like he's dissing himself there by saying that when he said he's the coolest heel since the 80s. But yeah, I mean, how they've done it in that kind of that weird way of how things start early on, whatever it's done, it's got us here to this spot. And after this, there's certainly plenty of angles and stories, more innings, if you want to take the Paul Heyman phrase, left to this thing. And we'll kind of see where it goes and how often Rock wants to wrestle. I don't think it's probably going to be that much is a guess, but maybe one or two big matches to go. And then he calls it quits. I don't know.
I think, if I were to guess what happened, and then of course this is just a guess, I would say that the original idea was to do Rock versus Roman at WrestleMania, and for that original SmackDown segment, for I think they definitely anticipated there was going to be some backlash, but not to the level that there ended up being. I thought, the fans would be so excited to see The Rock wrestling a major match at WrestleMania that they would not be that upset about Cody kind of getting pushed out of that spot. And I would argue that that still might have been the case if they had stayed the course. I think the fans would have eventually bought into The Rock being in this spot, especially if he was the kind of leaning character that he is now. Like, he's The Rock, he's so charismatic that I think he would be able to make it work. But they obviously pivoted very quickly, so we never got a chance to see if that would happen. But I assume they went into it with the idea being that it'll be, Seth versus Cody. And, there's also like the CM Punk injury might have thrown something into it, because maybe Punk was earmarked for a major match with Seth, so then they had to figure out what Seth was going to do, and maybe that was, pivoting Cody over to Seth, because if you're doing Punk versus Seth, what does that leave Cody, the Royal Rumble winner, with? So that's another factor that maybe changed plans. But I think the idea was that they thought that, The Rock would just be over because he's The Rock, and people they would not be anticipating that kind of backlash that they got for Cody. And maybe I think, The Rock, who's a really smart guy with great instincts for professional wrestling, he had that from pretty much the first day he debuted in WWE, saw that, you know what, there's way more into this if I'm a heel than if I'm just, superstar babyface Dwayne Johnson. And to his, and I think he was 100% right, because it does seem like there's a lot more into it. And you're now doing this match where there's a lot of potential. It's like, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, there's a lot of potential money down the road with a Rock versus Cody match, which there obviously is. But like, does The Rock really care about that? Does he care about like making money in wrestling?
Yeah, well, I think he is, he's into the record-setting business, and at least the perception that his comeback here has set records when talking about it's so funny now when they talk about the the sellout streak, and I mean I have no doubt it's legit, but when they talk about like the gate records, and like when he tells the fans like this is the biggest gate, you did this. What he's telling was you paid higher ticket prices than you did at any other point in history, right? I mean, that's kind of the thing with these records,
You
both on
guys, you
the
guys pay.
AEW side, yeah, and in WWE side, it's the same thing. You guys paid more and set a record. Thanks so much,
Well, for anything, and especially now with the percentage of fees and stuff like that. Like I know Brandon Thurston has said that he believes that a lot of times when they talk about the gate revenue, they're including Ticketmaster fees and things like that. So like the ticket broker agencies charging higher fees, have led to, a lot of these gate records, right? Because
Yeah, I have, and I actually mentioned, I think you guys actually had talked about this because I had made a mention of this before to him. When I worked in tickets, we never included, we were a vendor, a primary tenant rather. We in our revenue numbers, we never included Ticketmaster fees because we didn't get any because Ticketmaster had to, and the reason they get the fees is so they operate as a business and they're able to operate infrastructure and. That's kind of the thing is they're collecting for themselves. So WB, if they are, I don't know, they would have to get access. That would be to me an unprecedented amount of access in terms of finances to another company's books in a sense, and to be able to say we want to use this in our revenue. I think that's hard to do because, you also there are also publicly traded company and you can't take another company's revenue and claim it's your own. So I don't think
Well, they
they'll
don't
take.
claim the gate revenue, in the I don't know how that revenue is factored into their actual like claims in terms of the filings, because they're talking about they're sending a press release saying out, this event generated X amount of dollars or whatever, and this was the gate for that. But when I don't know if they're factoring that into the actual like investor reports and things like that.
Yeah, I don't think they could. That'd be pretty tricky because you're essentially falsifying revenue because that's not
Yeah.
yours.
Anyway,
Unless they,
there's no,
yeah.
yeah. Either way, there's no dispute about that this, is huge business, and did that they like they have the sellout streak, and they've got giant crowds pretty much every, pretty much since January. It feels like they've had at least 10,000 people for every Raw and SmackDown. They've been in some big markets, but they haven't been in giant, they've been in some pretty small markets and drawn some pretty big houses as well. And it's hard to think that it's because of anything other than the strength of, The Rock coming back and bringing more eyeballs to the product. And to The Rock's credit, he has not been, just showing up once or twice since, he first came back. He has been on TV probably about once a week, and he's been on Raw, he's been on SmackDown. He has been the complete engine of this feud is The Rock. It's not really Roman, and it's more Cody, but But The Rock is really the pivotal person here, and he's put in the work, at least in terms of showing up and creating the most compelling content of this feud. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, he's one of the biggest pop culture stars in the whole world. So yeah, I mean, for him, he has to. I mean, to me, like, this is what he should be doing. And I know there's been a lot of a lot of comments about, how he is kind of really the A side in this, and Roman is kind of fading into the background. Roman Reigns is not as big a star as The Rock is. He's just not. So I mean, I know that there's I think Dave or Brian, I think Dave was mentioning, they're gonna appear in the Tonight Show this week, maybe Friday or Wednesday, I don't know which day it is. And he's like, he should really try to make it 50-50 in terms of, I don't know how you make an interview 50-50 with two guys, but there's just
50-50 booking, you say?
50,
The
yeah,
Tonight
50-50
Show,
booking.
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But there's no way to do that, and they probably shouldn't, because if Dwayne Johnson was just sitting there and barely answering anything, and Roman's in the A chair, so to speak. Again, this is not for wrestling fans. This is for like mid-America that wants to be sold this, and they see The Rock as a movie star that used to be a wrestler, and they may not necessarily be into wrestling. They just need to be sold to get Peacock and watch this, to watch the show both nights. So, are you going to trust the guy that is arguably the one of the most well-known celebrities in the entire world, or are you going to go with Roman Reigns, who's very well known, but my mom would not know who Roman Reigns is, but she would know who Dwayne Johnson is.
But he's just, I think he's really kind of, I don't want to say a goes above and beyond because that's like kind of a stretch, but he has really put in a lot of effort, especially if you consider that they probably pivoted to him being a heel. Like he's cutting these 15-minute like Instagram promos and stuff on Cody. He's doing all this stuff. He's like you said, he's showing up a lot. Like he is really. He is not like, yeah, I'll do a few segments and then I'll have a match at WrestleMania. I mean, he is really, he has been the most important, influential, important person on WWE television the last 3 months. And I don't think it's not even close.
I mean, I can't think of a more important one other than Cody Rhodes. I can't think of a more important one in years.
Yeah, I mean, like,
He's so much better, and he should. I mean, this is his realm. He should be. But you're right. He's putting in the extra work. The long promo videos he does on the week on the Friday, usually before SPAC, he's doing those. And the other thing too, which I thought has been really interesting, is this whole thing about his non-PG language, right? And this whole thing. And I mean, he is. They really have to block out a lot of stuff he's saying on TV. Like not just saying shit, but the F word. And like he's and but he's and he's flowing it just into his language. I mean, he was doing it last night on Raw, and he was still like as he was walking out, you could see him mouthing the words. And I don't have a problem with it. It's just fascinating that he just is there, really having to work with this and make the product seem more, say more real, more intense. And that just is, it's just real. And like he even included this the other day after that beat down of Cody Rhodes outside, he put an extended clip after you when he, the one that were the producers saying cut, we're out or whatever. And he just keeps going. He's like, what, that doesn't mean anything to me. Like basically that treating us as this that was a real thing. He is just as he's on just this different level. And the interesting thing will be going forward when he is not in the mix, how much are they going to let other people do this? And I'm not saying swearing, but like to really ratchet up the intensity. And are they willing to really make this change? And so many people are so desperate to get back the Attitude Era. I'm not saying like that. But to add a higher level of intensity than they've had in the Vince McMahon era in the late days, that would be very welcome. I think that would attract more people into it because it doesn't feel like it's for kids. It feels like part of this, at least most of it, at this angle, it feels like it's for adults, and that's good.
Yeah, I mean, you use the word real to describe kind of The Rock's character, which is funny because he's The Rock and he goes by the name The Rock, and refers to himself in the third person. Like there's yeah. definitely elements of that that don't feel real. But I feel like when the discussion has come up with, I think there is a story, I don't know if Dave reported or someone else did, but there was some, you know, discussion a week or two ago about, you know, talent maybe being a little bit frustrated that, you know, The Rock is able to swear, and Cody was, you know, Cody did obviously did a blade job the other night on Raw, but, you know, and The Rock is able to kind of do whatever he wants. He's got Brian Gerwitz writing his promos for him, and other people aren't allowed to do that, which in the history of the wrestling business is the biggest stars are allowed to do a bunch of things that your regular mid-card stars are not allowed to do. But what it did was, it's not necessarily like, the swearing is not necessary to this, but it does hammer home that I think WWE's product in general has been very controlled and very sanitized. And obviously, especially in the late stages of Vince McMahon's creative tenure, there was a lot of verbiage that was forced to be used, and the characters were all really over the top and wacky and didn't feel real. And I say, I think that's hurt Seth Rollins in this feud. He doesn't feel like a real person. He's goofy Seth Rollins with his crazy outfits, and he's got, you know, the fans sing his entrance theme, but he doesn't feel like a real person. He feels like this cartoon character, and he looks very out of place when he's interacting with The Rock and Cody in particular. And it's not just because he's maybe not as charismatic as those people. It's because he doesn't feel like a real character. And I think he doesn't have the kind of, I don't know if it's the ability or the freedom to be able to feel real, like The Rock does. And I think if this is a lesson for the future of WWE's creative, the lesson is that these talents, especially the ones that are capable of doing it, should be given a lot more freedom to explore their characters and be able to come across the way that they wanted to come across on television, not necessarily the way one person like Vince McMahon wants them to come across on television.
Yeah, that could be one of the best developments of the Levesque era is more freedom on promos. And
yeah,
it's not like
yeah. Yeah, we don't need to see the Attitude Era again, like you said. Like, I don't need swearing. I don't need Ron panty matches. I don't need dick jokes, like all the stuff that I don't care about from the Attitude Era. But let these, like pretty much anywhere else in wrestling history, let the talents have a little bit more creative control over how their character is at least presented on television. Because the chances are you're going to get at least, I think, a little bit more compelling stuff as opposed to where the product has been over the last several years.
Yeah, when people believe in their character, it makes it easy for them to have dialogue and promos and so on that makes it feel legit. And you look at kind of up and down, at least, you know, the bigger, the guys that really get the biggest pop and the girls really get the biggest pop, that's kind of the ones that really stand out are the ones that are natural. And the ones that are, I've noticed more on the AEW side, are starting to feel more like characters. And it's a fine line, but once you find it, the crowd will tell you, you know. The one of the big things that I've really noticed with WWE in recent times is they're leaning into people singing entrance songs and trying to really, really make that a thing to engage the audience more. The audience seems more alive at shows for WWE than in a long time. And that's
they're more alive during entrances for sure. I would,
yeah,
during matches, yeah. I would say, especially during the meat of the match. I wouldn't say necessarily that they're super engaged,
but they're singing, they're involved. And if you were to ask most fans leaving buildings, they would probably say that was a great show. So much fun. They felt part of it. They felt part of the presentation rather than being presented to.
Yeah. I think that's a
good thing, because when your fans are into it, that just it helps that vibe. Especially watching at home, you like to see people that are into it and having a great time, no matter what promotion it is. That's something I that drives me as a fan, being like, these people are having fun. I mean, this must be something.
Yeah, I would say that the crowd is more invested in the wrestlers than they have been. And I think that was a huge like optics change from when Vince McMahon was in charge. I think I've been pretty consistent about this. I think that when Vince, by the end of Vince's creative tenure, fans had lost a lot of hope that anyone could really, you know, get a sincere push in the company. And if the fans rallied behind somebody, they would never get that, that fan support would never get reciprocated with better booking or championships. Because that's how Vince saw talent, as opposed to once Vince stepped down the first time, and Levesque took charge, I think that totally changed things, where it allowed for someone like, I'll use LA Knight as an example, because like LA Knight organically got over with the audience. And I don't think he would have gotten over if the crowd thought Vince was still in charge, because I think they would have said, they would have been really pessimistic. And I said, well, there's no point of really cheering for this guy, because if Vince isn't going to give him a sincere push, then it doesn't matter. And even though, you know, it's not like they made him world champion, Levesque, you know, put him in an angle with Roman Reigns, didn't totally humiliate him like Vince would have, and gave him a sincere, you know, albeit brief main event run. And I think that really does a lot of good in terms of keeping that kind of fan engagement and telling the fans that you are ultimately the decision maker here, because if you really get behind somebody, the company will reflect that with its booking. And that was not the case when Vince was still in charge. And I think that's been a major, major, major difference, is just getting rid of that black cloud of pessimism that existed because of Vince's track record, and replacing that him with literally anybody else.
And the LA Knight thing, I mean, they're at Raw on Monday. I mean, people are just, they're so into it. And it's just like, it's fun to see them into not just the upper stuff, but like the chants and like getting into LA. It's like, I mean, I don't really, you know, he doesn't really do like a whole lot for me in the ring, but that's fine. You know, but people feel something for him, and it makes the experience better. Yeah.
That's the way wrestling should be. I mean, you can go back 10 or 15 years ago and you can say like, oh, Zack Ryder was really over, and, you know, Dolph Ziggler was really over, but what happened? Vince's creative, you know, really beat them down over the years. And now that Vince is gone, I think you're seeing some of that, you know, organic fan engagement momentum return. And I think Levesque has done a good job at least maintaining that trust and making it happen. Now, I wanted to talk about, when we were talking about like The Rock and feeling real, the problem I have with this going forward, like if when The Rock leaves, are we going to be able to see like more leeway in this? Is that I still get the sense that WWE's product is still intensely controlled from a production standpoint. I think the crowd miking and muting and stuff like that is really obvious. I'll point to an example that bothered me was CM Punk's promo from, I think, 2 weeks ago. I watched that, and he was talking about The Rock, and he, you know, he's in Chicago, right? He's going to get all this kind of crowd reaction. And, you know, he said a line about, he just throws out this line about The Rock, you know, oh, when The Rock sparred with me, he realized his arms were too short to box with God, which is, you know, a line that he said when they were feuding 10 years ago. And like, the crowd, you can hear the crowd start chanting CM Punk, CM Punk, like really loud, this organic CM Punk cheer. And then you suddenly hear them just immediately go away, like instantly. Like they clearly turned down the volume on the crowd miking. So then Punk continue his promo. And I was like, okay, so they don't want any outside uncontrolled noise interrupting CM Punk's promo. And just, that's one example, but you can see it all over the show. And that is kind of worrisome to me as a fan, because it's like everything has got to be so controlled and micromanaged and manufactured, and it doesn't feel real. You know, you could hear, especially during backstage segments, you can hear like the whir of like the white noise of the crowd making some sort of noise, and then them going, oh, when something happens. Like it feels like I'm watching a multi-camera sitcom show with a laugh track sometimes. And that's like the opposite of where I think this like real direction needs to go.
Yeah, I would agree. I am more for the organic, being organic. And if you do something, if you're doing things that aren't getting the crowd into it, then you need to make adjustments, you know, and not everything. Yeah,
right.
Go ahead.
And this was like the CM Punk example. It's like, it's not like CM Punk wasn't getting over with the crowd. He was getting crazy over with the crowd. He was in Chicago. All these people were chanting his name, CM Punk, CM Punk. And they were like, ah, no, we got to turn that down. And that's different than being like, oh, this segment's bombing. We got to make it seem like it's good. This is like even worse than that, because it's like, sure. Oh, this is organic noise that we didn't plan for, even though that it is objectively good in pro wrestling to get that kind of reaction. I think we can all agree on that.
I thought it was pretty funny during the show closing angle on Raw, the people they chanted for to come out and even the odds wasn't involved in the angle at all, and that was CM Punk. Did you notice that they all of a sudden after the heels got the advantage, the crowd just starts chanting for CM Punk? He hasn't been involved in this at all. It's hilarious. Yeah. Like it's organically they see Punk is a superhero to kind of even things out, even though his arm is all, yeah, you know, he can't do it. And it's just, yesterday was quite the day for CM Punk. That's for sure.
Yes. I wanted to ask about, you touched on this a little bit, like it to me, like Rock and Cody feels like the big feud, for this WrestleMania build. How do you feel like Roman Reigns has fit into this build, both in just his character importance in storyline, but also in his performances as well? Because I do get the sense that there is, not that it's particularly damaging to Roman in the long term, but I do feel like him being like on the same team as The Rock has made him seem less important in WWE, because The Rock is just such a gigantic star and he's so charismatic. And he's so perfect for this that Roman feels like less of a big deal than he did like at this time last year, where he was clearly the top guy in the company.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely the B side in the team, and but it's hard because you're one of the most charismatic guys in the game ever.
Right. One of like the three most popular wrestlers of the last 50 years.
Right. So I was going to be tough for him to overcome that anyway, but his, you know, if you look at kind of his character in his promos and interviews, it doesn't really change that much. He's not showing, I'm going to say he doesn't have range, but he's not really showing a lot of range. And he's very much this, you know, just kind of like even keel, but he is playing he's kind of amped up a little bit the arrogance factor of, you're not going to take this, there's no way to do it. And that's really kind of driven home, because that just makes people want Cody to win even more. They, you know, arrogance is treated as a heel characteristic, and especially the absolutes, like, you're never going to do this. This is going to go forever, and all this, and the odds, constantly having to overcome the odds and everything. But yeah, I mean, as far as, you know, long term, I mean, it's a good time. I mean, this is well past the expiration date for this title run to end. You know, it's just, you can't, like, they can't have Cody lose again, because if Roman is taking time off afterwards, you have that belt on ice again. At some point, you just need some sort of jump start to things. And
I think that too, but they did the same thing last year. I was like, well, Roman's not going to be around after WrestleMania, so Cody really needs to win this title, especially because it's like both titles are on the line. And they didn't do that. So, and it hasn't really hurt them, as I mentioned earlier, that year. You know, that year where Roman kind of had the title and wasn't around that much,
it didn't really hurt them. But if you're going to, the pivot would then be, you know, to go Rock and Roman, and then you have to turn Rock again, which is pretty easy. But I think you're then going to have this frustration of like, why can't we just get what we want? But going back to kind of the original question with Roman, he'll leave for a while and he'll come back and the pop will be just as big. I mean, he's just a made guy. His ascent into the next level in terms of just that appreciation and love, I mean, he's going to get a pop no matter what, but it's going to be if he goes and conquers outside, maybe not conquers, but like he has to go away. He has to do the Rock Cena thing, try the acting thing and all that. And then come back and they're gonna see, oh, this big star is here, right? And he is what he is. I mean, he doesn't wrestle that much and he kind of does the same thing, and I don't think his star has necessarily to me felt like it's grown, but he's got to, if he's really going to kind of kick it up that next level, he's got to show more emotional range. And like The Rock has all these different things that he does, and granted, he's one of the best ever, but Reigns has, he hasn't shown that yet. And this heel persona, this very, you know, what he's done has been great, but if he wants to get kind of that next level, he's got to show something that's going to make fans feel something different. And that's going to be, it's going to be an interesting challenge, and we'll see how, you know, how often he wants to do that, how, you know, they can't just run back the same playbook when they have him come back. It's going to be interesting stuff, different stuff. And there's plenty of storyline things that they can do. It's just a question of how much he wants to be around for it. And you know, again, where kind of the next steps are with what's the end game in this next chapter after this weekend.
Yeah. I think like, if you review the history of like WWE's top guys over the last 20, 25 years, there's a gap in between kind of their peaks, but like Cena to me was always kind of like The Rock's heir apparent as the top baby face in the company, the super charismatic guy that can come out and work a live crowd for 10 or 15 minutes with his promo ability and get stuff over and get the crowd invested in him as a baby face. That's a really rare skill set. It's super difficult to be able to do that. There's only really been a few people in the history of wrestling that can really do that on a consistent basis. And, you know, Roman was brought in to be the heir apparent of Cena. That's how he was promoted. And he was miscast in that role. He just was never going to be, you know, 15-minute babyface fired up promo guy in front of the live crowd. And since pivoting to this heel character, it's much more better for his particular skills and his particular level of charisma, where he can play this kind of somewhat understated. There's also definitely some stuff about him that's not understated at all. But, you know, this menacing, you know, kind of cunning, evil mob boss style heel character is much more in line with, I think, his total skill set and his presentation than, you know, big babyface star guy was. I think that's almost indisputable.
Yeah. And if you look, one other thing that's kind of worked against him is, you know, you look at his, again, he doesn't wrestle that much, but you look at the last few, you know, headlining big matches he's had, none of them have really, like, most of them have been pretty boring.
The matches themselves.
Yes. I mean, you look at like the Reigns Uso match from SummerSlam last,
which August, was a huge match with a ton of like momentum and fan investments in that story too.
Yeah.
When like three, that should have been an easy match to have like a really great match with.
Yeah. Outside the intros, I mean, it went 36 minutes, you know, the LA Knight match was 20 minutes. You know, he last was in the Royal Rumble in that four-way, which wasn't really seen as like a top match. It was just kind of guys in the match.
It's a four-way match. I mean, there's only so much you can do with those.
Right.
I think like in-ring, like heel Roman in-ring to me, in addition to just having very, you know, being so reliant on interference and waiting for the ref bump and that kind of stuff to happen. I mean, he makes faces and he punches and kicks guys. That's pretty much it. But I think, the point I was getting at was this character that he has now is better for his skill set, but then he comes out and he's being, you know, paired with the most electrifying man in sports entertainment, like The Rock, who's just transcendently good at this. And I think Cody, as a comparison between, okay, it's unfair to kind of compare Roman to The Rock because The Rock is one of the best ever to do it. Although Roman's the one with a 1,000-day title reign and is being, you know, mentioned on the Mount Rushmore of WWE wrestlers and is being talked about by some people as like one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. So I don't think it's necessarily unfair to compare Roman to The Rock, because Roman has certainly been presented as the absolute top guy in wrestling for like the last 10 years. But like from a skill perspective, you know, people who know it's not really fair to compare Roman to The Rock. But yeah, Roman has been booked to be as good as The Rock, like just in from his presentation and everything like that. But as a comparison, I think Cody, while not on The Rock's level in this regard, has been much better at not getting swallowed up by The Rock's charisma. And part of that is, you know, Cody is feuding with The Rock. So Cody is allowed to kind of go back and forth while Roman has kind of a more difficult dynamic to manage where he's like partnering with The Rock and like he can't go head to head with The Rock or insult The Rock because they're on the same team now. And it's a little bit more of a difficult dynamic to manage. But I do think that Cody has held his own as a credible babyface opponent of The Rock and has shown the charisma and the ability to generate fan support that you would want out of your top babyface guy. I think he's done a very, very good job in this.
Yeah, and WWE has leaned in the fact that he is a babyface forever. For the longest time, it was so hard for them to really know how to book a true babyface. He's it. He's a great babyface, perfect for this role. And that's why it's been so, that clear dynamic is what people really get into wrestling for to begin with. It's the battle of good and evil. I like this person versus, you know, I don't like this person. There's always shades of gray. That is such a thing in pop culture now. It's been happening, evolving over the last, you know, 10, 15 years, whatever. But he's just, and he's active. He's constantly, you know, he's working house shows, regular shows. I mean, Roman Reigns, since last year's WrestleMania, has only wrestled 8 times. And one, two, I have numbers from it. One, two, three, four, 5 times have been quote unquote televised. Like on pay-per-views, and he makes appearances, but it's there's also that thing of you're, and we've heard this time after time in promos, so over the years, you're not around, you know, the you're not around guy.
Yeah, it's a meta narrative that fans are aware of now that maybe they wouldn't have been a long time ago, which is like Cody is the guy who's literally doing the work,
He loves this.
pounding the
Yes.
road and making all the towns.
Yeah, he loves doing this. He loves performing for us. He loves being the arbiter of right. And this guy's barely even here. And the champion should always be here. It was the same thing during a lot of the Lesnar times, when people actually cared. And it just he's just he's the right guy for the right time. And this is why, again, why he has not shriveled in the case of Rock. And they haven't made him look weak, you know, in a Vince era, who knows, probably would have looked a lot weaker, but he's looked strong. Even, you know, this, you know, we got beat up by The Rock last week and yeah, whipped to hell last night, he and Rollins. It's not like, oh, they're making him look weak. It's just that it's part of this whole thing of you want to see him get his, and you have this feeling it's going to happen. It's all part of kind of this, the, you know, the potion, in making this thing happen.
Yeah, and that goes back to my point about like the optimism that the fan base has that they didn't have under Vince. Like the fans believe, despite what happened last year at WrestleMania, the fans still believe that Cody is going to get his revenge at WrestleMania. So they're willing to tolerate these heat segments to build up the match because they feel like, you know, oh, just wait till WrestleMania. That's when Cody is going to get his revenge. When in previous eras, with good reason, the fans would be like, man, they're beating up the crap out of the babyface, and then we know Roman's going to win at WrestleMania again. And I think that's a key part of the wrestling psychology that WWE had kind of fumbled away during Vince's creative reign, was getting fans to think that way. And now they're kind of back on track. And I think that's made a huge difference. And I think, you know, Cody as a babyface, I think it's really interesting to me. And I think, it's why he's worked better in WWE than he has in AEW is that, you know, Cody, I think fundamentally is a really, really good babyface worker, just overall as a babyface. He cuts good promos as a babyface. He, you know, his matches, he knows exactly, he sells for a lot of it and then knows when to fire up. Like he really gets a lot of the nuances of being a good babyface. I think in AEW, his character began to stop getting cheered as much because I think that there was still this sense of phoniness that existed with Cody that some of the AEW fans saw through, and that kind of led to some people booing him, which led to more people booing him, which led to this more split reaction. As opposed to WWE, I don't think the WWE fan base sees that phoniness in Cody. And I'm not sure if that's because he hasn't been presented in a way for them to see that, or the fan base is less discerning than some of the hardcore AEW fan base. I'm really not sure which one it is, but it seems like Cody's shelf life as a babyface has lasted a lot longer in WWE than it did in AEW, for whatever reason. And I think the main difference is just the fan base is different, and what the WWE fans want is slightly different than what the AEW fans want in terms of a babyface.
Yeah, and WWE has not done the aspect of having Cody lose I'm never going to challenge for the world title match, you know, early on. I think that was hugely detrimental. And the fact that he was involved in such
the storyline would not work if Cody had lost that match in his first match in WWE.
Right, right.
He'd be chasing nothing.
Right. And that's part of the thing is if he can't go for the big prize, it's like, well, what's the point? Right. And then he got involved that very, very long feud with the Nightmare Factory and the Agogo promo, and then the never-ending feud with QT Marshall, and they lost their way with them. Whether or not that was a lot of his doing, Tony Khan's doing, just them thinking doing the right thing, and everyone trying to, the VPs doing the quote-unquote right thing of getting out of the way and letting other people be stars. That I think that has backfired in some ways, but yeah, this. They just leaned into it in WWE, and people, right, there's a difference in the audience, but there's a difference in some of the storylines and how WWE has not relented from pushing Cody as one of the top guys, no matter what. Will that change over time? Of course, because everyone has a shelf life. That's just kind of how it happens. But for the time being, you know, and this should have been the case in AEW, a company he helped found, he should have been always presented as upper tier. And they got away from it. And WWE is at this point he's the guy, and I expect he's going to be on the top shelf for, I don't know, anything could happen, but I don't know, 2-3 more years easily, probably, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I frankly look at the WWE roster right now, who else would be like coming for Cody as like the top babyface in the company?
You know, Rollins, you mentioned Rollins, and I would agree. He's just not, there's something about the presentation.
It's a known quantity, right? Like, he's been a top guy for a long time. So I'm sure he'll be in the mix. You know, Roman will be in the mix, obviously. Like, there, Cody has, despite not being a champion, has been the top babyface in the company, I would say, for the last year, easily.
As far as being able to garner sympathy, I mean, you look at guys like him. Sami Zayn, but Sami Zayn at this point, I suspect he's going to beat Gunther and have that's going to be a fun moment as well. As far as like having that sympathy, and being able to portray that, which gets you really just lodged in people's hearts, I don't see anyone, there's no one else. That's why he's so unique. And that's part of it, is actually emotionally caring. And, you know, there's guys like, you know, in terms of babyfaces, Jey Uso is very popular, but I have not seen the sympathy in terms of, I want to see him get revenge. It's just not there. And
yeah, there are a lot of guys that get, you know, their entrances are over. They might have some catchphrases that are over. But I do feel like Cody is at a different level in WWE in terms of like the emotional investment in matches that they have.
And it's earned. It's, people know his history, and it's earned, and that helps, you know, helps a lot.
He's just trying to win the title that Dusty never won, the WWE Universal Championship.
That's right. And to me, that is such a, that's been completely pushed to the background.
And I'm glad, because I didn't like that angle. Like, I thought it was really fake last year when they were doing the stuff where, like, Paul Heyman was like, oh, Dusty actually liked Roman and wished he was his son and not you, Cody. Like, that was fake, stupid bullshit that I didn't care about. And I'm very glad that that has not really been that big of a part of the story. Because, and, you know, as a wrestling historian, it's like, Dusty didn't care about winning the WWE championship. Like, Dusty was the booker and booked himself to be champion, like, for like 20 cumulative days. Like, it was, you know, it's one of those things that's like, it always felt weird. And Cody doesn't bring up Dusty in every promo like he used to. So I think I'm very glad we've gotten away from that.
Yeah, exactly. And it'll be, if he does win, it'll be kind of, it'll be part of the whole post, you know, the post promo on Raw. that it'll get mentioned, but it seems like it's bigger than that. And I think that's been, I think that's good. And yeah, the inclusion of The Rock and just this whole thing has just helped be like, this is a personal thing now, not just a Dusty Rhodes thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other thoughts? And the answer is I really don't, but do you have any other big thoughts on like WrestleMania and the WrestleMania card outside of those kind of two matches?
You know, overall it's the amalgamation of a lot of matches that they look good. They're interesting. Whether or not people care is another thing. You know, you look at like the Jey Uso versus Jimmy Uso match. I don't know. I think the entrance would be good, but I think, you know, are people really invested?
It kind of feels like that feud peaked like for the Roman Jey Uso SummerSlam match.
Yeah.
And they've kind of been treading water before the brothers kind of have their big blow off.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. There's some, you know, the Sami Zayn Gunter match, I think is going to be a moment because I think people expect Sami Zayn to win and end this streak. And I think that's probably good for, you know, for all people involved. You know, the Ripley versus Lynch match, I think is, you know, it's notable. It's two of the, you know, arguably two of, I would say the two biggest women stars, but it's definitely been made to a, you have to turn the heat up a little bit. I don't think the mentioning of the daughter is really doing it for me as much as just it's two of the top stars. And that's kind of
the two most popular women in the company by far.
Yeah.
Rhea's, you know, Rhea's character is indisputably popular in WWE, but like Rhea matches Rhea as the wrestler. It just, that doesn't seem over. She's over as like this kink worker, I guess. That's probably not a great term, but
I know what you, it's a different, what this is one of the things I like about though. It's a different presentation and a different, like there's just so many different avenues that they're really running into with all these different factions that there's really something for everyone from the Judgment Day to the LWO to this to that. Like you can get your hooks into something even if something else isn't working for you. But her run has just, it's been like dominance, and you know, it hasn't been like, wow, this has been,
yeah. I mean, she's had the title for a year. Like, does she have any memorable defenses that really jump out to you? The victory at WrestleMania last year was obviously a great match against Charlotte, but I think she has wrestled I looked at these numbers like a week or two ago, but she has wrestled an extremely low number of matches. Like I think she's had about like, I want to say like 25 matches that have been televised since last year, and she's been the women's champion the entire time.
Interesting.
I
think part of that is they don't want, you know, they're really into this kick of
long title runs,
of long dominant title reigns. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you're like, okay, we got to promote this person up, however, we don't want Ripley to lose until, you know, X date. You know, if they're looking to do a year long reign or something like that. But yeah, I mean, part of the excitement in reign ending is excitement in the challengers. And, you know, Becky's probably as close as it's going to get now. You know, you could do Jay down the road, but do you want to essentially repeat what you did over the last year? You know, obviously you have Bianca Belair, and there's just, and that's also the problem with having two, I don't love two titles in the company anyway, but you have two women's titles. So that kind of splits things up a bit. So yeah, I mean, you know, going up the rest of the card, again, like Jade Cargill making her in-ring debut, you know, protecting her obviously
her match day, you know, she was at the Royal Rumble.
Right, that's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good point. So having her kind of in a more traditional match, I mean, that's of interest, but isn't really like, I don't think must see. It's more kind of like where they go there.
You know, yeah, Bianca Belair, you know, who's tagging with Jade and Naomi. I mean, she made event WrestleMania, you know, night one of WrestleMania, like back to back years.
I think so. Yeah.
Or
against Sasha Banks and then Rhea, right? Was that it? Or
against Becky.
It's Becky, right? Right. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they did that Austin Owens thing one night that was like technically the main event slot, I think. But I mean, she had two huge singles matches and I think performed really well in both of them. But ever since she kind of lost the women's title to Io Sky, I feel like her booking hasn't been anywhere close to where I think it should be, given how much investment they've had in her in the past. And I think the quality of her performance just feels like another woman on the roster after, you know, getting these big matches at WrestleMania and having these title runs and performing well. I don't think it has anything to do with her performance. I just think that they haven't kept up her momentum as well as they probably could have. I think Bianca versus Rhea should have been like coming out of WrestleMania last year, you know, with Bianca and Rhea both winning, you know, their big matches. I was like, you know, those two gotta wrestle each other. Those are the two biggest women stars right now they have in the company. They're both young. They're both haven't been super overexposed, and they haven't wrestled each other. They've, you know, they've been on separate brands, and I think that's been to the detriment of both of them in terms of just them feeling important as wrestlers.
Yeah, and you know, looking at night two, you know, the Rollins McIntyre match is really kind of been put in the rear view with all the stuff going on in the main event. You know, if Rollins, depending on how good his knee is, he, you know, could lose here and then be out for a while to get healthy. You have Io Sky against Bailey. I expect, you know, Bailey, if they're going to go on the feel good theme, I expect, you know, Bailey could win that and the evil reign of Io Sky. But, you know, things like, you know, the triple threat between Logan Paul and Orton and Owens, you know, there'll be some spectacle in that, but some big RKO high spot. But
feels like just a weird three weird people to be in a match against another.
It does.
WrestleMania has these kind of matches that are just like three guys that you kind of want to get on the show. So you put them in a triple threat or a multi-man match. But it's just kind of odd that they're all wrestling each other in a triple threat match. That one's kind of odd.
They have the random ladder match, you know, the 16,
you gotta have that. That's ladder, and that's, you know, if they're gonna do a match just to get a lot of people on the show, you know, just do a match where guys are gonna fall off of ladders and stuff like that. It's always gonna get over. If you don't have another match on the show that's like that, it'll be a fun spectacle. Is someone gonna emerge from this match as a huge star? I don't think so. But I think it's a pretty good, I have no problem with those matches. Kind of not the greatest past year for Austin Theory. You know, he beats John Cena at WrestleMania. And now he's in this multi-man tag team match as maybe the least important tag team in the entire match.
Yep, I would agree with that. Yeah, it's just kind of going to the card. There's names, but in terms of the, you know, all the emotion is kind of really taken up with the two main, the main program, which it should be, and everything else is just, it's, you know, it's going to be decent in-ring action, entrances, and the pops at the end, which I expect to be Bailey, Sami Zayn. You know, the night one will be, you know, Rock and Roman Reigns winning to kind of add another, you know, nefarious thing. So I fully expect Steve Austin to make an appearance during the night two main event in some sort of
so your
opposition to Rock.
So you think that, why would Steve Austin come out there? He hasn't been teased at all, unless you count that
that's
he was
the
on the back of that.
It's a surprise. He's one of the Rock's greatest rivals. And I expect, you know, the odds are uneven for Cody Rhodes. He's going to get some help. You know, some people thought maybe Cena is going to make an appearance during this as well to help even things out, but there's not, I guess there is some history with him and Rock, but I don't know if that fits as well, but I expect that both main events are going to be, that main event on night two is going to be such a spectacle of just all kinds of stuff happening. It's I hope it doesn't overshadow the finish. I don't think it will, because I think they're smart enough to avoid that, but people are going to be exhausted by the end of that thing, put it that way. I think it's going to
they're going to be exhausted, because it's going to be at the end of a very, very, very long weekend.
Very,
and I heard
true.
It's going to be cold. I mean, we were talking about snow, you know, this week here, but I saw it's going to be in like the high 30s in Philadelphia, like by the time, like, you know, it's 11 o'clock at night, which I don't know if that will impact the crowd, like energy at all. Like the wrestler should be fine in that weather.
Yeah, I again doing Northeast WrestleMania in early April. It's such a an outdoor one at that. That is a, you know, it's a big risk, but I mean they did it for a reason. You know, I look at the temperature right now is 40, 40 degrees during the night. Yeah, so we'll see. Even during the day, it's not that warm. It's only like 60. So on Sunday itself, so at least it's not going to be raining at this point. But yeah, it's you know, those stadium shows are always tough. You know, with reactions and so many people are just so far away, they're just kind of there for it. So we'll as always, it's the opposite hard cam shot that really kind of tells you those are the people that you obviously see the most.
The last question is who what do you think happens on now? You told me you think that Cody that Roman and Rock win the tag team match. So it's bloodline rules, whatever bloodline rules are, which I'm gonna assume means just the bloodline can interfere a ton.
Anything goes.
And then who leaves WrestleMania night two as undisputed WWE Universal Champion?
Cody Rhodes
You don't think
has to be.
Senior Money in the Bank cashes in for a heat? Think of the heat, Josh.
Oh my God, that'd be such a Vince move, right? No, I think that could happen. You know, if they don't want Drew to beat Seth for some reason, and Drew just lays him out, and Priest leaves as the world heavyweight champion,
Yeah.
I could see that for sure. Because he's got to cash in at
They
some
haven't done
point.
anything with him.
They have it, and maybe that's the thing they want people to forget. That's very, very possible. But yeah, I think it's Cody's night, Cody's weekend, in a lot of ways, and it's going to be that main event is going to be like a 45-minute spectacle, and I'm
The
all here for it.
entrances alone are going to be 45 minutes.
I know.
The
I know.
yeah, I would say what I think is going to happen, if I was to bet on it, I would say Cody Rhodes is going to win the title. I don't really have an emotional connection to anything in WWE, so I'm kind of rooting for Roman to win because I think that would be the funniest, like as a observer. To just see the reaction from people if Roman retains. My dream is Tama Tonga comes down and costs Cody the match. I think, well, I have Cody, the how this would happen was that Cody and Seth win night one, which keeps all Bloodline members from interfering at ringside. And then Tama Tonga debuts as like the newest Bloodline member. In like he runs down and like gun stuns Cody Rhodes and then Roman hits him with a spear and wins. That would be the funniest outcome for me. I is that gonna happen? Probably not. I think Cody's going to win, but like I would have a very enjoyable like hour online afterwards, seeing people's reactions to that because I think it would be hilarious. But
I think Twitter might have an issue if that happens, but we'll
yeah,
see.
I think
Yeah.
this is it's I think Cody's going to win. I think it's
I do too.
would be I think it would be very problematic if he didn't. But I thought it'd be problematic last year and you know it didn't work out. It worked out fine for them. So maybe they'll run it back again. We're only in the third inning after all. Maybe we're in the fourth now. Maybe we're you know the starting pitcher is going through the order, you know, a second time by this point. Josh, do you have anything else you want to plug? You got any content coming up over the next few days or things like that?
Yeah, I just today being Tuesday, depending when people hear this, I did a about 45-minute interview with Josh Barnett of Josh Barnett's Bloodsport, the
The
10th anniversary.
Warmaster.
The War Master himself. We talked about Bloodsport X, which is coming up on Thursday on Triller with part of GCW's Collective Weekend. We also talked about Bloodsport Bushido, which is coming up in Tokyo, Japan in June. We talked about his bourbon line, shower burgers. What else did we talk about? Oh, yeah, Roadhouse.
Shower burgers.
Shower burgers.
Is
Yep,
this
shower
is
burger.
that a brand of something, or is this we're just talking about eating burgers in the shower?
Eating burgers in the shower. You'll hear about that and more on the podcast. And also he talks, you know, if the rumor that more WWE talents are going to appear at Bloodsport on Thursday, a little bit more on how the Baszler thing, Shayna Baszler thing came about. And then also we talked about Roadhouse, his opinion on the Roadhouse movie. So all kinds of stuff. So that's available now. And yeah, we're going to be doing wall-to-wall content all weekend long on WrestlingObserver.com and audio shows and plenty of written stuff to read about. And, you know, we're doing a live coverage of several of the other shows like, you know, Bloodsport, Joey Janela's Spring Break, the March Hickok Super Show, Mania itself, NXT, Ring of Honor, you know, all the usual stuff we'll be covering all weekend. So it'll be a busy weekend, but it's a busy week in our sports. So yeah, we're happy to do it and ready to get this thing really going.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Josh. I appreciate you coming on the show. And I want to thank all the listeners who continue to listen. Just any continuing listening to the show is probably the best support you can show. Give us 5 stars in your podcast app of choice. I'm told that's extremely important, is to give 5 stars and leave a good review. But give an honest review. Don't just slap that 5 stars. I want to feel like I earned it. Don't be like a, don't give it like a Dave Meltzer, it's Randy Orton in the ladder match kind of 5-star. Give it a real thoughtful 5-star. But thanks a lot, everyone, and I will talk to you again after a while.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.